This podcast is an unscripted, unedited conversation about true crime. We take the cases very seriously, but I don't take myself seriously at all, and neither should you. Welcome to Wife of Crime.
So, Russ, the story I'm telling you today is one of those cases that really frustrates me because I just don't have the answers. In this case, this young kid has his whole life ahead of him, and then he just vanishes, almost out of thin air. There are some really interesting theories, but there are still a lot of unanswered questions. This is the case of Brian Schaefer. Welcome back to Wife of Crime, a true crime podcast where I tell my husband, Russ, all my favorite true crime stories, and he reacts to them.
What's up, folks? I feel like we need a different intro.
No, it describes the podcast.
If the listeners were to describe the podcast, how would they describe it? I've been curious about that lately. I was going to ask that on Instagram.
I am curious about that, but that is the description of our podcast.
So. Yeah.
So, a couple weeks ago, I posted on Instagram that we want you, listeners, to send us your true crime stories or paranormal stories because we think it would be really fun to tell your stories on the podcast, like other podcasts do. Like, this is not an original idea. Other podcasts do this, like Morbid and My Favorite Murder. And I think it would be really fun for us to react to your stories. But there is a warning. If it is a paranormal story that involves ghosts, be ready for Russ to not believe you because he doesn't believe in ghosts.
And so, I'm going to make fun of you. So ours would be different because you'll send the story. And the other ones, they'll probably be like, oh, wow. And I'm just like, ha, that was dumb.
No, but I will believe you. I'll believe you because I believe in that stuff. You're just somebody who doesn't believe in anything paranormal at all.
Because I haven't seen anyone fly yet. You gotta fly.
But you're annoying.
You ever see anyone float?
No, I've never seen anyone float, but I believe in the spiritual world. I believe in, like, something greater than us happening. So, anyway, send us your stories so that we could tell your stories on the show. You can send it to our email at wifeofcrimepod@gmail.com. And it doesn't have to be paranormal. It can be anything crime-related, true crime-related, paranormal, anything crazy. Just because I think it would be really fun. And it would be a good opportunity to, like, you know, involve the listeners into the podcast.
Or even a funny story. I'm down with funny stories. I like to laugh. Jess doesn't really like to laugh. She's like the fun police.
You're an
but
idiot.
I like to laugh. So I got the review of the week. I haven't done it in a long time, so I don't know if I could call it the review of the week, but it is this week's review of the week.
Okay, go ahead.
And it's not making fun of me. I haven't had one of them in a while. So this one says, a chaotic review of my favorite cases. I just started listening to them today, but wow, I'm hooked. I found them from, I don't know why I tried to like give it that
oomph. You really did. You like really animated this review.
Yeah.
You sound like a one of those people who reads books.
Hey,
like the Audible.
You interrupted me.
Go ahead.
I found them from their Darlie Rudier episode because everyone I tell about it has a different opinion on what happened. It's amazing to hear two people who never agree go through my favorite cases because it feels like I am getting the prosecution and the defense while listening.
Ah.
Exclamation point at the end.
So nice. So us never agreeing works out sometimes.
Doesn't work out for me.
We agree sometimes. Honestly, we agree, like, I would say 70% of the time we agree.
I feel like we've been together, what, like 11 years or so?
Yeah.
And we've probably agreed about 4 times.
That's so ridiculous. Not.
I know, isn't it?
It's not true. Well, that was very nice. That was a nice review.
All right, so I got another one then.
You have another review? Oh, wow, you're really stepping up. Go ahead.
As opposed to what?
To forgetting it. Sometimes you forget the review of the week.
No, it's not reviews of the week. I had something else to say.
Oh.
Did you see the story of the father who found his son after 24 years of being kidnapped? How
yes,
he found him in China?
I posted it on Wife of Crime.
Oh, so I was going to give a quick thing. So the kid was stolen from like the yard, and how the father found him, the police started searching for him, and then they kind of just like gave up, like, oh, we can't find him. And then the father would put a flag on his motorcycle and ride around, they said, to over 20 provinces. I'm assuming that's like a state.
You know, maybe like a county?
Yeah, sure. But it has to be a lot, because on his motorcycle, he traveled over 311,000 miles, handing flyers out and having a flag of his son's description and face on his motorcycle. He wore out 10 motorcycles looking for his son. And then the police contacted him, and they said they got a guy who fits the description, and they did a DNA test on the guy. They should have hit up the shop. You guys already know, but they didn't. And it confirmed that this guy was his son after 24 years, and he was a 26-year-old teacher somewhere out there in China.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is so great. Hashtag
Rush Shorts. It was a short story.
That was a Rush Short. Yeah, it was. Good job. No, that I posted just, you know, as a story. I didn't do it as a post on Wife of Crime from the New York Post that talked about that case. But that's insane, the effort he went through. Wow.
He's probably the best motorcycle rider out there. He was riding for his son 311,000 miles. I don't know why they said that. Why didn't they just say over 300,000? Like...
Who cares?
I don't know.
But you know what? That's really nice. Wow. I'm so glad that they got to reunite.
Me too, because then it gave me something to talk about on the podcast.
No, that's really cool. It is really cool.
Yeah, shout out to the Pops.
Well, do we have any more stuff? Oh, yeah. We have to do our patron shout outs. That's right.
Oh, yeah.
So we do have some Patreons, new patrons that joined, and Russ is going to shout you out. Ready, set, go.
So this is my favorite part, my patrons. So this week we have Jess Garcia, Gigi, Christina, who I think that's with my boy Ty, right? That's Christina, yes. That we know. Mm-hmm. What's up, folks? Kristen, June, Denise, who is my arch enemy, Jamie, Tiffany, and Adeline. Adeline?
Maybe Adeline. I'm not sure. But so either way.
So cheers to everyone except Denise.
Okay, so you and Denise used to work together. And that's why he calls her his arch enemy, because they used to work together. And pretty much level of roasting, I would say Denise is Russ's level of roaster. So they just roast each other all the time. And Denise always makes fun of Russ. She's probably the only woman that I've ever seen that can make fun of Russ on his level of roasting.
No, she can't.
Yes, she can. She roasts the shit out of you all the time.
She don't win because she's crazy.
It's pretty funny, though.
And I win because more people are hearing this about her, how terrible of a person she is, than when she says it about me.
Well, she became a patron, so she's not that terrible of a person. Shout out to her. Thank you, Denise. Me and Denise actually are friends. I love Denise. She's great.
She finally did something right.
Oh, stop it. All right, so that's all of our stuff.
Oh, remember when we gave Denise a cat, the cat we found?
Yeah.
We brought the little kitty to her, the black cat.
Yeah. Did you give her?
She's a witch, so we gave her a cat, you know, a black cat.
I knew that was coming. All right, so this week I'm telling you about the case of Brian Schaefer. So Brian Schaefer's case is actually pretty popular. A lot of other like true crime podcasts and shows have covered it. I would say it's a pretty popular case in true crime because, you know, we've talked about a few missing persons cases on this podcast, like Amy Lynn Bradley's case, for instance. It was one of our first episodes. And, you know, missing persons cases are so frustrating because they just vanish and no one knows what happens. But we've never talked about a missing persons case that involves a man disappearing. And that's why I wanted to tell this one, because it is kind of rare for men to just disappear. You know, we can talk through the theories and we feel like we have a hunch sometimes, but we never truly know what happened unless they're found.
I feel like it's probably way more rare for a man to go missing than a woman.
Yeah, like we look at men as bigger and stronger, so the idea of a grown man being taken doesn't always compute in our brains.
Me
and
too.
To be honest, it's pretty rare.
Because I couldn't be taken.
You don't know that.
I haven't been taken yet. That's proof.
You haven't been taken yet, but you don't know if you couldn't be taken. Like, what if someone drugged you? What if someone shot, you know, like
if I'm shot, I'm not taken. I'm dead.
If someone stabbed you and you're weak, or they, you know, gave you drugs, you don't know.
Drugs would have no effect on me. I would drink it, but he got some more of that. That was delicious.
Yeah, okay, whatever, Ross. Anyway.
You get so annoyed.
We imagine that a man would either fight back, or that if they do go missing, they're doing it because they chose to be missing. So in this case, there are some interesting theories about what may have happened to Brian Schaefer. Was this a case of the ultimate Irish goodbye? Was Brian Schaefer taken and murdered by a serial killer? Or was it a sinister plan orchestrated and carried out by someone very close to him? I'm interested to hear what you think.
I think that it's more likely when men go missing that it might be like money motivated, not just like, let me take this dude.
Well, I'm going to tell you the story and I'm interested to hear what you think at the end. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. So Brian Schaefer was born February 25th, 1979, and he was raised in the suburbs right outside of Columbus, Ohio. So he wanted to become a doctor. He got his undergraduate degree in microbiology in 2003, and then he started medical school in 2004 at Ohio State University. In March of 2006, Brian's mother sadly died from an aggressive blood cancer called myelodysplasia. Friends and family say that he took his mother's death, you know, pretty hard, but that he seemed to be holding it together and kind of pushing through it the best that he could, you know, the best that anyone could in a situation like that.
Yeah.
While in medical school, he started dating a fellow medical student named Alexis, and they had planned to take
number one stripper name in the Bronx. Alexis.
What?
I just always feel like there's a stripper named Alexis. Alexis, coming to the stage.
Oh, God, Ross. So while in medical school, he started dating a fellow medical student named Alexis. They had planned a trip to Miami for spring break that year. And according to friends, Brian was planning to propose while he was on this trip. So clearly, Brian had a lot going on in his life at the time. He and Alexis were in love, and she was a huge support system during the death of his mom. So on March 31st, 2006, Brian took his last midterm before the start of his spring break, and he and his dad celebrated the end of midterms by going out to a steak dinner. Brian's dad, his name is Randy, he said that at dinner, Brian seemed very tired and worn out, but otherwise was acting like his normal self. So Brian told his dad that he was planning to go out and like bar hop with a bunch of friends from school. And they were going to go to a place called High Street, which is like a strip of bars in downtown Columbus. Brian's dad later told investigators that he kind of stayed quiet, but he wanted to tell Brian that he doesn't think he should go because he looked really tired and out of it. But then at the same time in his head, he was like, well, you know, he's been through a lot. His mom just died a month ago. He needs to have a little bit of fun. So he just wanted to, you know, keep his mouth shut, even though he kind of had a weird feeling about it.
Makes sense.
A little after 9 p.m., Brian met his friend William Florence, a.k.a. Clint, at a bar named the Ugly Tuna Saluna.
Huh. Sounds like a Western where he's meeting Clint.
Yeah, right. He met his friend Clint at the Ugly Tuna Saluna. About an hour later, Brian went to the bathroom and called his girlfriend Alexis to say goodnight. And they were talking, you know, about their Miami trip coming up in 2 days. So Brian and Clint spent the next couple hours bar hopping down the strip, having a beer and a shot in each bar.
And we've done that.
Yeah, we've done that. We actually did that in our neighborhood one time. We went bar hopping, remember?
Yeah, we didn't do a beer and a shot because Jess gets drunk fast and my hangovers last 2 days. But we had a drink like coming down like 10 bars or so. That was a lot of drinks.
It was. We had a drink at each place. It was fun. We just kind of like randomly woke up one day and we're like, let's have a bar crawl, just the two of us. It was a good time. So Brian and Clint spent the next couple hours bar hopping down the strip. They had a beer and a shot in each bar. And a little after midnight, the two guys met up with Clint's friend, Meredith, who drove them back to the first bar they started at, the Ugly Tuna Saluna, to have one last round before the bars close. Because, you know, outside of New York City, bars close earlier. They close around 2 a.m. So last call is like 1:30, 1:45. So while in the Ugly Tuna Saluna, Clint and Meredith get separated from Brian, and they don't see him for a while. And then the bar does last call, and they're trying to kick everybody out. So Meredith and Clint start calling Brian's phone over and over again, but he doesn't answer. Finally, once, you know, the bouncers and everyone kicks everyone out, they're like, okay, well, maybe he Irish goodbye'd us and just went back home.
Which I like when people Irish goodbye, because then you don't have to say bye to everyone and give the awkward hugs and stuff.
You're like an Irish goodbyer.
Yeah, because I don't want to say bye to a lot of people.
It's true.
I like, if someone catches me on the way out, I'll just like wave.
Yeah, you're definitely an Irish goodbyer. We've Irish goodbyed people many times.
But why do you have to say bye to everybody?
Because it's like nice.
It takes too long. And then there's always that one person like, oh, stay for one more. Stay for, and like,
that's true. Yeah.
Jesus Christ. You see, I'm trying to go. Now I have to have this argument with you. Then I'll say, sure. All right, I'll stay for one more. Give me 1 second. And then I just leave anyway.
True. Well, they just assumed that Brian Irish goodbyed them. And they went back home and that was it. So the rest of the weekend, Clint and Meredith, they called Brian a few times, but he never answered his phone. And, you know, by Sunday, the phone kept going to voicemail. But it wasn't until Monday, when he missed his flight to Miami, that people were really worried.
In my mind, I feel like he's going to be found floating in a river.
Interesting theory. Just wait a little bit. So he missed his flight to Miami, and then Brian is reported missing by his girlfriend.
This week's episode is sponsored by BarkBox. I got good news. So BarkBox is a monthly subscription for your dog where they send them treats and toys. And I hit them up and I said, yo, my listeners like free stuff. So what's up? And they said, oh, good news, Russ. We love your show. So we'll give you and your listeners 1 month free if you sign up for our subscription service. And I said, cool. I said, how do they take care of that? And they said, oh, so just go to BarkBox.com/wifeofcrime, or they can click the link in the show notes. And this way we know they're your homies and we'll give them a free month. Oh yeah, they do themed ones, and you could do ones for big dogs, those super chewers, or you could even get them for those little poodles with the pink hair that you keep in your purse. So don't forget, go to BarkBox.com/wifeofcrime to let them know I sent you and get your free month.
So police start investigating the disappearance by going, obviously, to the place that Brian was last seen, the Ugly Tuna Saluna.
Luckily, I hate that name.
Yeah.
Yeah, who named that?
I don't know.
That's the worst
Ugly
name.
Ugly Tuna Saloon. Yeah, it is weird.
Like, hey, what? I want to make a saloon, but I got to think of something that rhymes with it. Saloon, nothing does. Saluna, tuna. Oh, I got it. Like, that's...
I don't know.
That's a drawing board murder bar.
So police start investigating the disappearance by going back to the bar that he was last seen at, the one that shall not be named. And luckily, they had security cameras in the front. They watch the security footage and they see Brian entering the bar. And you can actually look the security footage up online. I can show it to you. You see him entering the bar at 1:15 a.m. And then they see him on camera again at 1:57 a.m., talking to two girls right at the entrance of the bar. And then you watch him at 1:57 walk off camera, but he walks off the camera back into the bar. Now, the thing about this bar is there's only one way in and one way out for patrons. The other exit is an employees only entrance or exit.
Okay.
So the patrons that are in the bar don't go through that exit. They only come in through this one place where there's cameras. So you see him at 1:57 talking to these two girls outside the entrance and then walk back into the bar. And then that was the last time he was seen. And then Meredith, his friend, starts calling his phone at 2:01. So that's a 4-minute gap of time that you see him on camera and then Meredith begins calling him and no one can get in touch with him. So within those 4 minutes is when something happens.
I don't know. That's weird because you're also in a bar. You may not hear your phone either.
True, but his phone went straight to voicemail at 2:01 when she called him. What's interesting is, like I said, the bar had only one way in and one way out. And since the, you know, cameras never show him actually leaving the bar after that, it's only right to assume that he possibly either went through the employee exit or he never left the bar.
I wonder how drunk he was.
Well, he's probably pretty drunk. I mean, he's having a shot of liquor and a beer in each bar, and there's a strip of bars. So I'm sure he's probably a little drunk.
Because the amount of drinks he had, maybe that's why he just left through another door. Because like when you're drunk, you just say, oh, that's how I get out. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So that's not really a big deal.
True.
And the best way to Irish goodbye is through a door that no one's around.
Yeah.
The Irish goodbye
true.
Tip from me.
True.
If like we ever met like a bunch of listeners, I definitely would Irish goodbye all of you at the
no,
end of the night.
No, you would not.
I'd say hello, but when it's time to go, I'm just leaving.
I wouldn't, everybody. I would say bye to everyone.
Yeah, but then Jess would be there a long time and I'd already be home sleeping with Biggie.
So initially, investigators toyed with the possibility that Brian may have changed his clothes and put on a hat and exited with the crowd so that no one would see him. But there are cameras from three other surrounding bars and from, you know, they're from different angles. And after watching the footage from all of them, that theory was kind of dismissed, that he just like snuck out in the crowd because there were multiple angles and no one saw Brian in the crowd of people leaving that bar.
And there were no cameras, I guess, in the back of the bar.
No, there were no cameras back there. So we don't know if he left through the back entrance. That was the employee only thing. So after this, they spread out from the bar, thinking maybe he stumbled out the employee entrance, was drunk, and kind of, you know, stumbled in the back alley and either got hurt or someone hurt him. Like maybe someone tried to rob him, hurt him, or killed him. And they started just like venturing out. But he lives about 6 blocks away.
Mm.
So they kind of did a whole search of the area from the bar to his apartment 6 blocks away. They looked in all the dumpsters. They brought dogs, sniffing dogs. Nothing was found. They get to his apartment, the whole search party, and his car is there. Nothing looks weird about his car. His apartment is completely in order. Nothing is missing. Nothing looks weird. So it doesn't seem like he like left and skipped town and like moved out of town. It doesn't seem like he snuck out with the crowd and then just left and moved away. So investigators are like, okay, there has to be something, like some type of foul play had to happen, or the dude never left the bar and something happened in that bar.
Does he have money? Is he a rich dude?
No, he's a medical student.
Oh, he's broke.
He's just a college student. No, I mean, I don't think they're rich. I think they're just like middle class.
Okay.
So it looks like he literally vanished out of thin air. In the weeks after the disappearance, everyone close to Brian is being investigated, and they were all asked to take a polygraph. Everyone agreed to the polygraph except one person.
Well, everyone knows don't take a polygraph anyway because it's basically nothing. It's the equivalent of me telling you as the best profile you ever heard if you're lying or not. And I'm basing it off nothing but a hunch.
True. So everyone agreed to it, though, except one person. Can you guess who didn't agree?
His girlfriend.
No, his friend Clint, the guy that he'd spent the entire night bar hopping with. The guy, you know, said, I told police everything I know. I'm not taking this polygraph. There's nothing else I know. So there's no point in me going through all of this. I told them everything.
It makes sense because nothing good can come from someone taking the polygraph. Because if you fail it, now they think you did it. But if you pass it, they still are keeping you as a suspect because they know polygraphs are shit. And they only use it to help them build a case, not to actually just like dismiss it.
Completely rule you out.
Yeah. So it's bullshit. Don't take that witchcraft crap.
So Alexis, Brian's girlfriend, obviously she was devastated by all of this. And she said that she started calling his phone every single night. And every single night for months, she would call his phone, partially because she was hoping he would answer and partially because she wanted to hear his voicemail because, you know, she wanted to hear his voice because she missed him.
Did he have life insurance?
No.
Huh.
So every single night she would call. And then months later in September, it didn't go right to voicemail. It rang three times. And she found that really weird because this whole time from March to September, it went straight to voicemail. Then it rang three times. So she called police and told them that the phone rang. And they got in contact with Singulair, which was his provider. His
Singular?
Yeah, Singular, whatever. Singular.
Is that Singulair? What is this, French?
No, I thought that it was called Singulair.
No, I think it's Singular.
Oh.
I think that's like bad credit phone service.
Well, whatever.
Like prepaid.
Well, see, the police got in touch with them, and they said it was possibly a computer glitch.
I'm still laughing at Singulair.
That it was called Singular.
Jess has a lot of words funny.
No, maybe it is singular. I don't know. I
can't stop laughing. I'm picturing you right now like one of them French hats that go to the sideway. Singular.
Oh my God. I'm an idiot. Okay. So anyway.
Singular was definitely flip phones.
Singular.
Damn, yeah. Now I said it.
You said it.
And I meant it that time. It's not singular. No fucking way.
I'm thinking of Singulair. What's that? Is that an allergy medicine or something? I'm thinking of something singular. Anyway, okay, whatever. We're off topic. So the police called Singular, the cell phone provider, and they said that it may have been a computer glitch.
That's what I was thinking.
But since the phone did ring, it pinged a tower.
Oh.
And it pinged a tower 14 miles north of Columbus. So the police, you know, they went to this place where the tower pinged and they looked into it, but nothing ever came of it. And the cell phone was never recovered. So police, over the course of the next couple of years, received tons of tips, like tons and tons, but they never led anywhere.
Were there any tips that they were like a big deal? Like,
well, they did. I mean, they investigated all
like,
of them.
Like, oh, I think I saw him here. Like stuff like that.
Yeah. Like people who say they saw him, people who say they know somebody who knows something. And they investigated all of them, but nothing ever came of it. It
kind
of led nowhere.
Because while you were doing the case, I looked up a picture of him and he's just like a pretty regular average looking white dude. Like mm-hmm. He could be me. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
Someone could say, oh, I saw him, you know.
Yeah.
There was nothing that like necessarily stood out.
Yeah, nothing really stood
out. He wasn't
out
wearing like
him.
An eye patch or like something like that.
Yeah, he was just like a typical college aged white kid.
If you're ever missing, wear an eye patch. That'll make you get recognized.
True. So Brian's dad, Randy, you know, obviously he's super distraught. His wife dies in March. A couple weeks later, his son goes missing.
Damn.
I mean, he's super upset and distraught. And he's desperate. So he decided to consult a medium who works with law enforcement. Why are you laughing? We have a medium who listens, who consults on missing persons cases.
I still think it's funny.
Brian's dad, Randy.
Shout out to the medium that listens. You keep doing your thing. I hope you don't see no scary people.
So he consults a medium. And the medium says, which is very interesting, Russell, because you said something in the beginning similar to what the medium says. The medium said, your son's body is in a body of water under a bridge.
Yo, last time I told you, if there was a medium, I'm probably one of them.
Well, there you go.
But I don't want to see dead people, so no.
So the medium said this to his dad, and Randy and Brian's brother, Derek, they organize a search party. They get a bunch of like small boats and they go into the, I'm probably going to butcher this. They go into the Olentangy River, which is the closest body of water to where the bars were. And there's a bridge there. And they go on the shores and in these, you know, search the shores of this river. They go into the water and they search all around the bridge and they don't find anything. There are pretty much like three dominant theories in this case that have officially been considered. Number one, Brian was tired of his life and he wanted to escape. He left the bar on his own and he left behind everyone and everything in his life. The ultimate Irish goodbye.
Oh, that's a good name for this episode. We call it the Irish Goodbye.
But I don't believe that. I don't buy it. I don't buy that he just left. Do you? I don't think he would just leave. He was about to propose to his girlfriend in Miami. I mean, he had all these things going for him. So, like...
He was about to be a doctor. Wait, was he in medical school yet?
Yeah, he'd been in medical school for 2 years. So he had a lot going on in his life. I just don't foresee him just up and leaving.
But he's very sad about his mom.
He's sad about his mom, of course. But he's close to his dad. That's and true, he has a brother. So it's hard. And he has a girlfriend who he's serious with. Like, so I just don't foresee him up and leaving. I don't buy it.
Tough call.
The second, like, theory of the main theories that they've talked about is that he exited the bar drunk through the employee exit.
That's what I was thinking.
And tried to get home, but ended up near the river, fell in and drowned, or was walking home and someone tried to rob him, or someone, you know, some type of crime was committed, killed him, and got rid of his body. And that's pretty, I don't know, to me that seems pretty, like, pretty dominant theory, in my opinion.
I don't think it's the one where he was going home and couldn't find his way home, because we did that case where the guy got hit in the head with the axe and he was able to get dressed and go, like, get dressed and get ready to go to work, even though his brain was damaged.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, you just know where you live. Like, you could stumble home drunk. I've seen people do it many times.
Yeah.
So I don't believe that one, but...
But he could have fell into the water.
Maybe he was drunk and he tried to go for a swim. Last week, we went with Carrie to this restaurant. Next thing you know, we were trying to climb under this waterfall.
That's true. We did. We were drunk and we got in the water.
I wasn't even that drunk.
I was. And we got in the water and tried to get into the waterfall. You're right.
Yeah.
The third theory is that his friend Clint was involved in some way.
Why? I need a motive.
I don't have a motive for you. It's just, you know, cops have been very, it's interesting. In this case, like, they aren't really talking a lot about what they think could have happened. They're not, this is all kind of theories that true crime people have put together, that friends and family that know him have put together. But the cops are kind of staying really shut about this. So I don't think there's a motive for Clint to be involved. But...
Maybe they're staying shut because they don't have anything.
Maybe.
And they don't want to be like, oh, we look like dumbasses because we don't have anything. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have any evidence, you just don't have any.
Now, when it comes to this case, police briefly considered the theory that Brian could be a victim of the smiley face killer. This is a theory that there was a killer or killing group in the late 90s, all the way up through the 2010s, that was killing young college-age men all throughout the Midwest and Eastern United States.
Really? Randomly?
Listen. Two New York City detectives named Kevin Gannon and Anthony Duarte, they investigated this and they've come up with this theory called the smiley face killer theory, because there were, like, at least 48 men who were college-aged white males who ended up in a body of water.
Yo, like the dude that was found in the Hudson River over here. I remember that. And they were saying maybe it could have been some smiley face thing.
Because at the scenes of the crime, there is a smiley face graffitied on the wall somewhere near where the body is found. It's a loosely based theory, but these two New York City detectives... They got the FBI involved, and it's a theory that's out there because it's been 48 men, and they're all young, college-age white males. Most of them are popular and athletic, and they end up dead, and it looks like they fell into water, but there's always a smiley face at the scene.
Now, I wonder if we go around looking at graffiti, are they random smiley faces and... You know, because if you're in water, you could float away and end up anywhere. So is there something keeping them at that point where the smiley face is? Are they tied up or something? Because if they just floated there, then that could be a coincidence.
It could be.
But not at 48 times.
Yeah, like, but it's happened over 40 times.
But also, if I was going to draw something, I really can't draw. And the only thing I could probably draw is a smiley face if I had spray paint.
That's true. So, but...
I am not the smiley face killer.
But it's just interesting because he fits the description. And you know, it's not, they didn't find his body, so we don't know if he's in a body of water, but he does fit the description. And when they consulted that medium, the medium said something about a body of water. So they did consider this, honestly.
They considered the medium?
No, they considered that he could be a victim of the smiley face killer if there is one.
That because doesn't make sense.
Because they're just pulling things out. At this point, they're just throwing anything to the wall and seeing what sticks.
I'm for it. You gotta figure it out. But I don't believe that, because the only thing that is what make it maybe the smiley face killer is he's just like a young white dude.
True, he's a young white dude. That's really it. But, you know, the smiley face killer theory is very interesting, you have to admit. It's happened in 11 states, 11 different states, same type of person, same type of, you know, death, and there's a smiley face on the wall nearby.
This intrigues me.
It's a little weird.
I wonder, maybe we got to look more into that.
Yeah, I mean, it's you can easily find stuff about it. A lot of true crime podcasts have covered it. There's a lot of like different things online about it. Reddit goes crazy about it. It's really interesting.
Well, Reddit goes crazy about everything.
They do.
The only thing that I want to know on Reddit is I want to know which stock to buy before it goes up 1,000,000%, so I could be rich already. Any of you guys are down with that, let me know.
Well, eventually, over time, police in Columbus, the Columbus police, you know, they rejected this theory because his body was never found.
Yeah.
So this theory ended up going out the window. But it is still something to consider, and it's interesting.
Well,
and it's really interesting to me, by the way, that you, before, first of all, Russ never knows the story I'm about to tell him, ever.
No.
He doesn't know anything. Today, he knew a little about it because we talked about it ahead of time where I said it's a missing persons case. But he didn't know any other details. And the first thing you say is he's probably in a body of water. And then later on, that's what the medium in the story said. Very interesting.
I'm intuitive.
I have to say. You are intuitive.
I told everyone, if they need help, the first help on your case, the first one's on the arm. Then after that, you got to pay. But, you know, it's kind of like when drug dealers just give you a little bit of drugs and then you get hooked and you do more. But that's not the case. I never seen drug dealers handing out samples. I don't know why they always say that.
What do you mean?
Like, they'd be like, oh, they, when you're young, like, they give you a little bit of drugs for free, and then you're going to want to do drugs the rest of your life.
I never heard that.
Well, I did.
Oh.
That's not true. Nobody gives stuff away for free.
You are. You're giving your profiling skills away for free.
Yeah, because I'm going to hook you. And then you're going to want to know everything, and I have all the answers.
You're an idiot. In September 2008, Brian's dad, Randy, suddenly died in a freak accident. When he was out in his yard, there was a huge storm, and he went out to the yard to clean up some debris, and he got hit on the head with a tree branch that fell out of a tree, and he died.
Oh, damn.
And his neighbors found his body the next day. So I feel so bad for this family. Their son, Derek, who is, you know, Brian's brother, he lost his mom, lost his dad. His brother's been missing all these years. This poor guy. I feel so bad.
They got some bad juju over there. Something's
really
going...
sad.
Yeah.
After his obituary was posted online, someone posted a condolence book. So you can like post online condolence book and people can, you know, write memories about you and stuff on there.
So basically like a Facebook wall.
Kind of like that, yeah.
I always find that so creepy when like people pass, but their Facebook wall is still there. And then
yeah.
People write on it. And
I
don't know. Maybe it's people's way of coping for like they're talking to them, but it's always so like weird.
I don't know.
It makes me uncomfortable.
Really?
Yeah. Like, because people have passed that I know. And then like, I don't delete the profile or nothing, but now I see people write on their wall, like talk to them. There's nothing wrong with it, but I do find it eerie.
It is kind of weird. But I mean, I get it, though. I get the people that are posting on there. They miss them, and they want to have some type of connection. I get it.
Well, if I die, don't write on my wall, because I promise I'm not going to check Facebook. I don't really check it now.
Yeah, you don't.
Maybe I'll check Instagram.
God.
DM me.
DM me.
Slide in my DMs.
So after his obituary was posted online, they posted a condolence book and people started saying like nice things about him and memories. And then someone posted, "To Dad, love Brian." And then in parentheses, it says U.S. Virgin Islands. Investigators trace this.
That could be a troll.
And it turned out to be a hoax because the computer that it was posted from was in Franklin County, Ohio, which is a few miles away from where, you know, Brian was from.
Whoever did that needs a beating.
People are so fucked up, right?
Yeah, I do dumb stuff and like troll a little bit, but not like that.
No, that's a whole nother level. So in 2019, an image of an alleged homeless man in Tijuana, Mexico, bearing a resemblance to Brian, began circulating online. And a Columbus news station forwarded the image to detectives because people were saying they saw Brian and they, you know, would put his face and the homeless guy's face next to each other.
Yeah, but homeless guys' faces, like, I've seen a lot of, like, homeless white dudes with big beards and dreadlocks in New York City, and they could be him. You could barely see their face between the dirt and the nappy beard. And
yeah.
And they always have a dog. I always feel bad for the dogs, but then I always think, dogs lived outside before we brought them in anyway, so they're probably chilling.
As long as they're feeding them and being nice to them, you know.
Yeah, I ain't giving none of them money, because I feel like then they're trying to use the dog to get money. They probably make more money than me.
Probably.
I should not shower for a bit and bring Biggie out. I'd be rich.
Probably. But they ruled this as, you know, not being Brian, even though it was something that did circulate online and people thought maybe they spotted him. It ended up, the police, like, they, you know, did the facial person? Recognition and decided it wasn't him.
Did they find the person who wrote that Brian?
No,
thing?
No. Wrote on the dad's wall? No.
Yeah, that dude's a piece of shit.
Yeah, no, they didn't find them.
Especially because the dad's dead, too, and, like...
Like, I wonder who did that. Who?
That ain't even funny.
No, who would do something like that?
I love a good troll, but that's not funny.
No, not at all. So, now, there's a podcast about this that's, like, a dedicated podcast to this case. It's called Brian Schaefer, Dead or Alive. I've never listened to it. It's only 3 episodes, but apparently it goes a lot more in-depth about the case. And according to Reddit, you know, it's pretty detailed. And there are some things in that podcast that aren't really in other podcasts or like mainstream media about this case. So I'm kind of interested to check it out.
Yeah, if you guys check it out, let them know we sent you and let me know what you think. I haven't listened to it, but I probably won't either. But you guys
tell
me what it's
about. Yeah, he probably won't listen to it. You don't listen to true crime podcasts that much.
Yeah, you know what's really good? I don't know if anyone ever listened to Radio Rental.
It is really good.
Did I say that last podcast?
I think so, yeah.
Well, check it out and tell them we sent you too.
So I find the smiley face killer theory super interesting. And
me too. I'm actually intrigued.
Yeah. And like we know someone, I'm not going to say names on here or anything, but we know someone locally who passed and a lot of people thought that this could have been that case of the smiley face killer theory. It was a few years ago.
I don't remember this.
I'll tell you off of our mics because I don't want to say the names or anything, but it's just really interesting that this is still a thing. And I wish that I could talk to these detectives who have this whole theory, because it would be really cool to hear their point of view on why they think this and like all the connections.
You don't know if you can talk to them or not until you try.
True. I should reach out to them.
Yeah, you have a better chance than me. They're like, get away from me, you schmuck. You go over there.
But it's just nuts that this has happened like over 40 times, right? That the same type of crime has happened over 40 times.
Just a white dude dying, it's not crazy. Like,
but I mean, like, in a body of water with a smiley face on the wall.
I got to see a picture, and I want to see the picture of the smiley face, too.
They're all, there's a bunch of them.
What
there's
color 40, are they?
Over 40 of them. Different colors and everything. Well, you should just look into this a little more so you could find out more information. It's very interesting.
Maybe.
And, so that's the case of Brian Schaefer. It's unsolved, and we don't know what happened to this guy. And part of me just leans towards the theory that he was drunk, he exited through the wrong exit, he encountered people who robbed him, and he ended up dead, and someone hit his body. That's really kind of the theory I'm leaning towards.
But if it happened that fast, where do they hide the body? Did someone like get into a fight with him, stab him, pull him in the car? That's a little weird, too. That's a lot of effort, especially, you know, he's a grown man. He could probably, you know, he might be almost 200 pounds or,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
A man is going to be at least 150, but now in today's society, we're all obese, so we're at least 250. I'm not 250.
But it's true. Like, That's a good point. Like, that's a lot of effort. If you do try to rob someone, you shoot them, usually you would just run from, like, someone who robs somebody and shoots them, they just run from the scene and leave the body there. Like, it's a lot of effort. But it's so weird that he never exited the bar. That's what's so weird.
Yes, he did. There was another door. He left. He's not in the basement in the freaking walk-in cooler.
No, he's not. But
yeah, so he exited the bar. Nobody carried him out. Yeah, so no, he walked out the back door. Or maybe got into a fight with someone that works there. Maybe he walked into the kitchen of the bar and peed on the floor. He had to pee, and they beat the crap out of him, dragged him out. Who knows?
Yeah, I know. But it's just crazy that his body was never found. I don't know. I find this case so frustrating. But we may never know what happened to Brian Schaefer.
I may look on YouTube, the smiley face killer. But then it's definitely going to end. My end of the night's going to be, you know, I'll fall down that rabbit hole. And before you know it, it's always two girls in a parking lot fighting. I don't know how it always ends up there on YouTube. Every damn time.
When you go down YouTube rabbit hole?
Eventually, I see two girls fighting, and I'm like, oh, let's see what happened there. And it's always in a parking lot. Every time.
All right, everybody. So, that's it.
All right, folks. So, we will catch you next time.
Check us out on Instagram at Wife of Crime Pod. Facebook at Wife of Crime, the Crime Family. And what else?
We got the Patreon popping where you get extra episodes.
Yeah, Patreon is popping. So definitely, as Jess would say, check out the Patreon. It's in patreon.com/wifeofcrimepod.
Just put Patreon, Wife of Crime. Everybody knows how to use Google except your grandma. You got this.
And then obviously, like I said in the beginning, send us your stories so we can read them on an episode.